You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 397, and we've got a special surprise for you tonight. Welcome back to Punk News Podcast number 397, but it's actually 396. 396, that's how we roll. That was the first of two surprises. The first surprise was we gave you the wrong number of the podcast, but here's the second surprise. Well, let's see if the listeners can guess what's different about tonight's podcast. First of all, I'm here with regular podcaster, reviews writer, Tom Trauma. Tom Trauma, what's happening? What's going on?
I nothing much, man. Should I break him the news that what's different is I'm not wearing pants?
Oh, I thought that was the same as always.
Well, I thought that was our little secret.
Usually it's assless chaps.
Exactly. My butt cheeks sweat to the chair. Stick to the chair.
It was recently Tom Trauma Day at Punk News. And honestly,
yes.
we got four. Tom Trauma is definitely one of our, I'm not going to rank people, but Tom Trauma is definitely one of our top reviewers. He's also one of our most frequent reviewers. And so it was nice to dedicate a little bit of a day to him. Tom Trauma, can I tell him about the little known fact about you that we discovered when I put that picture up? Or is that like kind of secret?
Which little known fact was that?
The little known fact that's related to William Shakespeare, if you will.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it wasn't Shakespeare. I never did anything that
serious. But we can talk about that?
Sure, I don't
care. Tom Trauma.
I told you, John, I'm a multifaceted individual.
Tom Trauma.
I've done many things in my 45 years.
Tom Trauma is a multifaceted individual. I just learned that he does community theater, or he used to do community theater.
I haven't for a couple of years, but I have done quite a bit of that kind of stuff, yes.
Now, did you do like Shakespeare or comedy or contemporary
stuff? Yeah, mostly comedy, stuff like that. I don't think I've ever done anything overly serious, at least not for years and years.
And what got you in? How'd you get into that? Did you do that in like high school and in college or something?
I did do it a little bit in high school. And it's just, I don't know. It's just kind of fun. I used to joke that I tried to do one thing a year so I could keep my SAG card. But like I said, I don't know if I'll do anything this year or not.
Did you have a SAG card?
No, that's a total joke. Oh. I don't believe you get, you know, SAG card from doing like small, Michigan 100. Theaters.
No, I guess you actually had to be, but people paid to see you act.
Listen, dude, that's where the real action is. The real action is, you know, in the small little. you pay? Yeah, occasionally, but yeah, it's not generally much of a moneymaker. I mean, I don't have to file a return on it.
So, Tom, like, what's your favorite play to do? What was your favorite play to do? What kind of characters do you like playing?
It started in high school, our senior play. It was called the Clumsy Custard Horror Show or something like that. And I looked at the parts and I'm like, I don't want to be the lead because there's too many lines. So I tried out for the like sidekick, and the theater teacher, who was a visionary, of course, said, I'm not seeing you in that part. I'm seeing you as the villain. So he cast me as a villain and I did the villain. So I like that role, playing the villain role. I played, you know, the straight man. I've played the goofy. But I like the villain if I have a choice.
I don't think I could ever act, because I don't think I could ever remember the lines. Like, I am terrible.
It does suck, dude. Yeah. And I tell you what, that's one thing as I've gotten older that I'm not interested in. That's why I honestly don't do it much anymore, because I swear the older you get, the harder it is to remember shit. Like, I can still remember stuff that I memorized when I was a kid, but trying to memorize something new, it sucks.
Memory is so, like, I can still do the Beastie Boys Paul Revere, which I remembered when I was like 14. But like, anyways, we're also here.
But you know, oh, go ahead, listen, Tom. Jed, you know, when my kids were little, we used to play this memory game. I don't know if you ever played this when you were a kid, but you have all these cards and you flip them upside down, right?
Oh, and you make them give and you $20.
You flip them up one at a time and then you try to match them.
Yeah, memory. It's called memory.
And my kids would just be like, grab these cards, and I literally would look at it and flip it over, and then I'd already forget what was underneath it. So I don't know.
Yeah, I should love playing game when I was little. I haven't played that game in a long time. I should.
Well, you would have kicked my ass because I sucked at it once I became an adult. Mm. But anyway,
We are also speaking of the Beastie Boys and memory and three card Monty. We are also here with a regular three card Monty provocateur runner. We are here with news editor Sam Barrett. Sammy B, what's happening? How you doing?
I'm good. I don't play cards. I don't gamble. I'm quite boring. So, yeah, no cards for me, man.
I was at a casino.
You're not.
Oh, go ahead, Tom.
You're not boring, Sam. You know, I got to say, I'm always on this when I'm on. 95% of the time is John and Adam, which is great. That's, you know, we're like the backup.
Tom, you just gave away our surprise.
But oh, sorry. But I was so excited. I'm always excited when I get to be on with a slightly different mix of people. So I'm just saying, you're not boring to me. And I believe this is the first time we've ever had this particular combination.
I think actually today's a special day.
So we got John, the regular boring white guy.
That's right.
You got me, the old guy, and you got Sam, the female. So it's a pretty well balanced crew.
Very well balanced.
Adam White is not here today. I think he's like super busy at work. So Adam White was a little touchy this week, as I am a little touchy this week. So we hope to have Adam back next week. Do you guys think Adam will be sufficiently recovered by next week to be back on the podcast?
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know what the details are. I thought maybe he was just gone or something. So I don't know.
No, I think he's super busy at work or something like that. And so he
you imagine that, putting his job that actually pays his bills ahead of this crap that we do for free and fun. Where are his priorities?
Crazy, crazy. Well, anyway, I'm excited. We got a new mix here on the podcast, and it's not often we get a new mix. So let's reach into the mailbag, and then we'll talk about some record collecting. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This first email is from Ashton, and he says, "Hey, John, I hope you told hard-ass Harley you write for Punk News. I've told him multiple times you guys talk good shit about his new stuff. Saw Propagandy last weekend and Sulin Shreds. What a show." And he also disses someone else that I'm not interested in dissing, because I'm not interested in igniting any battles. But Ashton, I tend to agree with you. So anyway, thanks.
Was he dissing a certain related vegan who would beat your ass if given half a chance?
I no comment. I got a rep. I have no comment. Anyway, Ashton, thank you for writing in. And thank you for telling Harley we're fans. You know, actually, let's talk about this briefly. As a writer, it's usually pretty fun when an artist you like and you review, they say, "Oh, that's a good review," or, you know, "Thanks for the interview, I appreciate it." It's nice to know that when you're appreciating an artist, they're appreciating you appreciating them. You know what I'm saying? And one of the unique things about Punk News, which is fairly unique for Punk News, and maybe is solely unique for Punk News, is that we don't assign reviews, we don't assign interviews. If someone wants to review something, they say, "I want to review it. You know, I want to interview this guy." And so I say, "Okay." The positive of that is, you know, there's other publications where, you know, records just get slammed and spat on and shat on that really shouldn't, just because the reviewer either has an agenda or the reviewer doesn't know what the hell they're talking about with this record. I can think of some other punk magazines where great records just get like spat out because they don't conform to a certain thing, or the reviewer spent like no time with the record whatsoever. So at Punk News, the reviewers spend a lot of time with the records. The drawback is most of the time people don't review records they're going to hate. They review stuff they already know they're going to like or are likely to like just based on what they know about the band. So that kind of has two issues. The first issue is, you know, our reviews tend to skew high just because we have fans reviewing the bands, which is, I guess, unfortunate to a degree, but that's certainly not the worst thing in the world. The other thing is, I think to a degree at Punk News, actually, I'm going to mention something else too, but to a degree, I think sometimes we have writers that are writing to please the artist, and I think we could do a better job of separating review from fandom or review from press, if you will. You know what you guys understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. It's definitely it's difficult, and you know this as well as anybody, John. Once you get to know someone and once you get to like someone, it is difficult. I'll be the first to admit.
Yeah, I think maybe some of the younger reviewers don't, and this is not just at Punk News. It seems to me that younger people, maybe I'm wrong, but they don't seem to understand the difference between advertisement/press and, well, PR, that is, you know, public relations. They don't seem to understand the division between advertising and PR and the division between journalism. You know what I mean?
Well, the fact of the matter is, if you're in print nowadays, you pretty much have to be a hype machine. You can't do anything negative because you got to get whatever advertising you can get. We're not necessarily bound by those same conventions.
Right. So
our advertising, I mean, I don't think the single mom's cougar ad that always pops up every time I go on Punk News is going to be affected by whether or not I like the new Ministry album, you know?
Well, I think that's just you with the cougars, okay?
I tell you, it sucks to get old because that's all I get now. That mom's gone wild dating sites is like 90% of my advertising.
But I think it also has something to do with, like, you know, the fact that we are like, we in punk news, we want to be here. You know, this is not like our primary source of employment or anything. And so we're doing it for the sake of loving punk. Right. And I think, like, you know, as the younger kids, they'll learn, they need somewhere to learn that. because you know, you do get starstruck when you're dealing with, like, you know, your favorite bands and stuff like that, and of course you want to hype them, and of course you want to say, oh, how much I love them, but, like, you know, I think that's where all the old people have to carefully craft these, like, young kids and, like, show them the punk way.
But we'd rather chastise them.
Well,
no, I'm just kidding. I get what you're saying. You know, when I first started, I would just grab a lot of, hey, we got this for review, and I would grab stuff. But the fact of the matter is I am pretty picky about what I review at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm generally picking stuff that I think I'm going to like. I don't always love it. You know, mm-hmm. Like I said, I just mentioned the new Ministry album. I was a little disappointed with the new Ministry album. Good, but never really great. So that happens, and it's harder, and you know, you have to write a lot more words to explain why something's not good than you have to write that something is good.
It's also like the smaller a band is, the harder it is to give them a negative review, you know, especially if they really tried, you know. I do get a little concerned when you know, people say, like, this band comes out of nowhere. People are like, oh, you know, yeah, I love this band. It's the greatest band ever. It's so great. They're so awesome. He's a great review. I got to interview him. He's the interview. And then they never talk about the band ever again. And I wonder, you know, PR people are getting sneakier and sneakier. And I shouldn't even be saying this on the air, but punk news, it's probably easier to penetrate punk news PR-wise than it is other publications. So I'm starting to feel like I've got what's that movie with Frank Sinatra with the brainwash guy? Manchurian Candidate. I'm starting to wonder if I got some Manchurian Candidate situations, you know?
Well, what I love, one of the things that I do love about punk news is the fact that it's kind of egalitarian in that a local band who's a nobody gets the same attention as far as reviews go, to get the same attention as a national mm-hmm. act. And same thing with what we debut. We might debut, you know, we might get a big fat band like a Strung Out or something to debut a song with us, but also some, you know, band that you never heard of. And I think that's sort of a cool thing, you know. It's, you know, we take all comers.
Yeah, I whenever, like, you know, I do news or whatever, right? And whenever I debut, like, something, I get so much enjoyment in, like, you know, debuting an orcore band, like, you know, that's well known, equally as much as, like, debuting something that's, like, you know, this band is brand new and their stuff is so damn good. You know, I'm like equally as hyped about it because I'm like, this is good and I hope it catches fire. If it doesn't, then oh well, I like them, I don't care.
Yeah, my concern is I just hope the younger writers understand that PR isn't being nice to you because they like you. They're being nice to you because they want you to do something. And just because PR is asking you to do something doesn't mean you have to do it. And if there's news out there, PR does not get to tell you when you do and do not post news. If the news is out there, then we post it. You know what I mean? I feel as though PR has stronger grips than they used to have, and I believe that's detrimental to a publication.
Well, these kids need to just do like you and I do, John, where we just delete like 20 emails a day.
Yeah, and just write about Jelly Biafra all day. That's all we do. He's our second and last mail for the evening letter. Somehow I forgot how to use words today. Hi, my name is Jeff. I've been busy with work and I've been trying to catch up on my favorite podcast. Just got through with the episode about Holo Roy Orbison. It got me thinking. While I agree that any present hologram form of an artist is silly and blasphemous, I'd like to extend it further to cover bands. I'm not talking about the cover band at a bar that doesn't take itself that seriously, but I'm referring to a band that covers bands that actually tours and plays fairly big shows. And I'm just going to step aside. I think he means bands like Bad Fish or the B Street Band or or those kinds of bands. What do you guys think about cover bands that think it's okay to tour on someone else's music? And that's from Jeff. Sam, what do you think? The Australian Pink Floyd, Bad Fish, those kind of bands. What's your stance?
You know what? Like, I understand where they're coming from because they're catering to, like, you know, the folks that want to only hear, like, you know, that, you know, music from a particular band, and, you know, they only play the hits or whatever. I don't care for it unless it's, like, you know, a 90s boy band pop thing, because, you know, that's just nostalgic for me. Because, like, I'm not going to go and see Sublime with Rome or anything, you know. But yeah, no,
I like how Sam just called Sublime with Rome a Sublime cover band, which is true.
They only have one more. They only have one more Sublime member than Bad Fish. Yeah. Truthfully. But
still, like, you know, I was like, whatever. I'll just listen to the album, like, you know, on a record or a CD or something, because I still have CDs.
Me too, and John too. You're on with the Red Crew. We're the John too, and my me too. We're the CD crew, so
you're
in with the right group.
I love CDs. I do not understand the hate for CDs. But back to this question is:
You want me to talk to this real quick?
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
I guess the thing is like that Brit Floyd and the Backdoors and all these bands. I guess
there's a cover band called the Backdoors.
Yeah, Doors tribute band. And all these Beatles things, you know, I guess, you know, the original bands aren't around. So I guess, you know, it meets a need to a certain extent. I don't have an issue with it. I really, I'm not going to go see Appetite for Destruction, a loving tribute to Guns N' Roses. But the fact of the matter is Guns N' Roses is a pretty limited supply. You know, Metallica's playing here next March and tickets sold out a year in advance, you know, before they even went on sale to the public. I mean, I get it. You know, I'm a capitalist. If people want to go see it, go see it. It's sort of lame, but sort of fun at the same time.
How about Rhino Bucket, the band that makes songs that sound like they could have been written by AC/DC if AC/DC was 40% less talented?
Well, yeah, there's plenty of that, too.
You know, I mean, I don't think I would ever really pay to go see a cover band. I mean, to me, it would just come off as, like, depressing, like I'm not seeing the.
Well, but what if they're actually closer to the? You know, the problem is a lot of these cover bands are closer to the vintage sound of some of these bands than the current lineup. If they're still out there kicking around, you know, if you go see Damaged Justice, a loving tribute to Metallica, you're actually going to hear the Metallica songs you want, not the shitty songs off like the Load album.
Yeah, but it's not going to be as good as Metallica in their prime, and it's just going to be kind of like
no.
You know, I mean, if you're at a, although I must say I do love cover bands on Halloween. I love them when but that's when it's by a band of like a group of other musicians or a collection of bands that are getting together just for that. Because
Who doesn't want to hear a full set of Misfits covers?
Well,
because that's what it always is on Halloween.
Yeah, well, that's their thing. Mm-hmm. Or you could just go to Jersey and go see Misfits, like, you know, soon.
I can't afford it.
I know.
So anyway, so it looks like our opinion is we don't really care, but we're not fans of the tour. And I agree. But listen, I don't think these cover bands are stealing money from other active bands. And I think generally people going to see these kind of cover bands aren't going to the kind of punk shows that we're going to anyway. So I would say pointless but harmless. That's my verdict. You can always reach the podcast at punknews.org. We love getting your mail. We've got two hardcore collectors on. Sam is a mega hardcore collector. And I think Sam and I kind of collect differently. I collect a lot of old, used stuff, but Sam, you mostly collect new stuff, right? Or newer stuff?
Yeah, I collect a lot of contemporary things.
Yeah, yeah.
I do crate dig, but I don't crate dig as much as I used to because I have no time. Plus, I think my allergies will kill me if I go into dusty places like we have gone before. It's a lot of new, colorful things. Beautiful.
So, Sam, what cool stuff have you gotten lately?
So I actually recently got my shipment. I ordered tiny elephant series or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Um, Yeah, they're out of like Ohio. So they did like a run of like limited white lats. So I picked up two of those. I got the Gates lath and a Vasudeva lath. So I'm really stoked about that because I think they're out of however many people that ordered them in one particular day. So God knows how many is actually out there in white. So I can't wait to get that on my turntable. I haven't actually spun anything recently, though.
sounds like a good pick. Sam, do you have a most cherished record in your collection, or you can't really pick that out?
Sam, are you
still going to Japan this year, Sam?
Oh, actually, no. No Japan this year.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, that sucks. One of my friends is in Japan right now, and they're like posting pictures on like Instagram like crazy, and I'm like so jelly, so damn jelly. I already have like an entire map of things to do in Japan, including a whole bunch of record shopping. But yeah, no, I'm not going. I really want to go though. Maybe next year.
Yeah, apparently, like, Japan's, like, the best place in the world for records, like, apparently. Like I spoke to Greg Daly, who's a guy that lives in Philadelphia and tour manages, like, every band you ever heard of ever. And he says, like, in Japan, like, you'll go into, like, a giant building and it'll have, like, 8 record stores in it. And, like, this is in Tokyo, rather. And, yeah, like, one shop will be all 77 punk. Another shop will be all emo, and that's all it has is emo. And another shop will be all, you know, Finland black metal. That's all they have there. And apparently, like, every single record is like pristine there. It's like poor form to like have a beat up record.
Yeah, it's crazy. We me and my husband, we go down to Limited to One in Manhattan, you know that
How's that guy doing? How's he doing over there?
He's doing very well. We'll pop in every now and then whenever we're in the city, and a lot of the records that he gets is from Japan. Whenever he goes to Japan, he'll come back with like an entire crate of stuff. So, and all his stuff is like really clean. So it's great.
Well, you would think going to Japan to get records, the profit margins would be non-existent.
I know a record, Sit and Spin Records in Philadelphia did that. And actually, I think it's like not that hard to do. Like, I think
it's not.
Are the records not that expensive?
Yes, records are cheaper there.
Oh, nice.
Used records.
Oh, my wife. I could just see that now. Let's go to Japan. I heard that records are cheap there. My shit would all be on the front lawn.
Tom, you get any cool stuff lately?
You know, I got a bunch of, you know, you're familiar with Southern Lord Records, I'm sure, John.
Indeed, I am.
It's mostly.
As a side note, Tom, you follow their Twitter.
No.
They're kind of dicks on Twitter.
I don't tweet, John.
It kind of turned me off. Like they're kind of real assholes on Twitter, and it really kind of bumped me out.
Well, my thing, so they're sort of known as an extreme metal label, I would say, more than anything else. But they've also done a ton of great, great punk and hardcore reissues. So I just got a bunch of stuff and they were having a great sale. So I didn't spend a ton of money on it, but I got the first two XL albums. XL were kind of like contemporaries with like Suicidal Tendencies. They were like a Venice, California, LA, greater LA band that never kind of made it, like a crossover band. But I got their first two albums, Split Image and The Joke's on You. And I got Electric Funeral, double album, Complete Funeral, which is everything they ever recorded. Speaking of like D-beat black metal stuff.
I think they were like a Sabbath, like a tribute band, essentially.
Well, they, you know, they're named after a Sabbath song, but no, they're not at all.
Yeah, I'm thinking like, what's that band? Like, is it Dope Throne? That is like basically, whatever. Go ahead, Tom.
I guess I don't know. I got the Offenders reissues, which I think had all their major releases on a double album. Endless Struggle, We Must Rebel, I Hate Myself, and Bad Times, all on this beautiful double gatefold. And then I got one, John, that another double that you may be familiar with because they were a Philadelphia band, YDI, Why Die.
Oh, yeah. I saw them.
They're kind of like an early crossover thrash band. They put out a couple of albums in the 80s, and I got that on a double album. And the albums are A Place in the Sun and Black Dust. So I've been really just soaking up the double albums lately. I don't know. I've been on a real kick. And like discography. I love discographies, you know. I mean, there's something to be said about getting everything a band ever did and not having to worry about them putting out a shitty new album.
Indeed. I saw Why Die at basically a dive bar in Philadelphia. And I also saw him open for Samhain. But at the dive bar in Philadelphia, he wore like a Freddy Krueger glove like during the whole performance, which I thought was kind of cool, you know.
Anyway, yeah, so I've added quite a few records, and they're all very nice. And I got some other stuff in the mail, too, but I'll save that for next time.
Well,
I love to mail order.
Well, I got a couple of picks. Tom Trauma, you might know this record. I got Sonríes Salvaje. Do you know that record? Sonríes
Salvaje. That doesn't even sound remotely familiar, Jeff.
Are you sure?
I don't know. I'm sure you're going to enlighten me here.
It is the Spanish language re-recording of David Lee Roth's first album, Eat 'Em and Smile.
Oh, Eat 'Em and Smile. Yeah, I remember that. I remember those. En el Calle del Tabaco. Yeah, I remember that. I remember.
So,
studying Spanish in, I think I started studying Spanish in ninth grade. I studied all through high school and some in college. And I remember the teacher bringing in that David Lee Roth record. He recorded the whole thing in Spanish. It was campy fun.
A few bands have the Beatles and the Rolling Stones famously did this in the 60s by recording some songs in German. And also the Rolling Stones did a song in Italian. Mm. David Bowie did a song in Italian and German. He did Heroes in German and French. And he did, Ground Control to Major Tom, Space Odyssey. I think it's Space Odyssey. He did in Italian. He definitely did a song in Italian. David Lee Roth tried the same thing in 86. He re-recorded his I'm a huge Van Halen fan. And after David Lee Roth left Van Halen, he started his own solo career. And each record is worse than the last. But the first solo record –
I remember Skyscraper was pretty rancid.
But, and that's only the second one. But Eat 'Em and Smile actually was like really good. Like not as good as Van Halen, but really good. You don't like – I like Eat 'Em and Smile a lot.
Was that Just a Gigolo? What's on
that? That's the EP that he put out.
That was the EP. Okay. What's on? What's the hit?
Eat 'Em and Smile's Yankee Rose, Yankee Shy Rose. Boy, Tobacco Road.
Yeah, I don't know, John. I don't know.
Going Crazy.
I like the cover. Sam would probably like the cover. He's got his face painted like some kind of a crazy native. It would go good with her colorful record collection.
Well,
as long as you never played it.
I think it's a great record. Anyways, so David Lee Roth, he thought he could tap the Spanish market by re-recording the whole thing in Spanish. So he sang the whole thing in Spanish. Like you often see records with the song titles are in a different language, but it's the same sound recordings, you know. But this is, he literally re-recorded the entire album in Spanish, and it's exactly what you think it would be. So, I mean, this is not the kind of record you get to enjoy. Well, I enjoy it, but you don't get it because it's high art, if you know what I'm saying. Second,
is that a valuable record, John, or just a novelty thing that you were looking for?
$25. Would you say that's valuable? Okay. I don't know. You know,
so novelty it is.
It's more than I'd pay for a novelty record, but hey.
So I've been trying to get that for about. I mean, I could have bought that online. You can buy any record online, but you know, I mean, if you buy every record you want online, you'll be broke in a week. You know what I mean? So.
Oh yeah, and it takes the fun out of it.
Right.
Got to have the thrill of the hunt.
Speaking of that, I do buy stuff online if it's something that I really, really want and it's really, really rare. And I got something I've been wanting about 2 or 3 years now. There's a lot of bands called VCR. My favorite band called VCR was a band from Canada that was some of the most savage synth punk you've ever heard. And they only played Philadelphia once, and I didn't go, and I can't remember why. It might have been like a Thursday. And man, I'll tell you, like whenever you don't go to a show, like you might regret going. You might regret going the next morning. But if you don't go, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? And they broke up like a month later. And on top of that is they had and you guys know how I love the Limited stuff. They had a tour only cassette tape, like basically at that show, like 3 other shows that sold out, and they never sold it again. And I had every single VCR thing except for that tape. I'm trying to get it for 2 years, and I finally got.
So you're gonna spend $40 to buy that stupid tape that's worth 5 cents.
$9.99 plus $3.99 shipping. So I would say very reasonable.
Oh, $14.
And I wouldn't say it's a stupid tape, but I would say it's a wonderful tape packed full of enjoyment. And it's called the 3D EP. And if you haven't checked out VCR, you should. It is, if you like synth punk, it is savage, and it's the best contemporary synth punk I've heard. I love VCR. They're broken up now. They've actually turned into a band called Prom Night, which I like too. Not quite as much as VCR, but I got to check out Prom Night a little bit more. Last thing I got is a record by Troika. Do you guys know who Troika is?
Nope.
Do you guys know who the Flames are?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Your favorite band ever.
Troika was the band my man Michael J. Richards was in before the Flames. Troika is much different than Flames. The Flames is kind of power pop, punk, and new wave, where Troika is strictly early 70s, mid 70s prog rock. And it's not the greatest record in the world, but it's an interesting record. And it does show the unique askew perspective of Michael J. Richards that you definitely hear on the Flames record. The Flames record is the record that I put out. It was recorded in 1980, but not put out till 2017. And that's what was cool. Now I've got every single thing my man Michael J. Richards recorded except for one 7-inch from his garage rock band in the early 60s, which I will get eventually. Anyways, let's play a song.
Let me one more thing. Yeah. So Saturday I went to a record show.
Yeah.
And I only bought a couple things. I've kind of been holding my money because I'm going to some live shows. I'm going to spend a bunch of money at those shows. I did buy Punk's Not Dead reissue. The first Exploited album.
Oh, why?
Because I actually didn't have it. I like the Exploited.
You're criticizing me buying a VCR cassette tape and you're spending money for the Exploited, Tom?
John, we're on a punk podcast and you're talking about David Lee Roth in Spanish. But anyway, hey, but the other thing.
Don't
so
act I've like you weren't blasting, you know, Panama out of your Trans Am in 1987, Tom. I know you were.
Dude, I loved the Sammy Hagar Van Halen album. So I absolutely blasted 5150 and OUA.
Sammy Hagar. Oh, my God, Tom, I hate you.
Oh, come on, dude. Let's face it. Van Halen was dying a slow death with David Lee Roth.
I disagree 100%.
And Sammy injected some new life into it. The first two Sammy records are better than the last handful of David
Lee Roth. I could not disagree more with you, Tom. I seriously could not.
All right, listen. Like, we don't agree on the Misfits and Danzig and Van Halen.
I thought we do agree on the Misfits.
Avoid those topics.
What do you mean?
Well, your favorite Misfits album is Earth AD.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think it's probably their worst.
But anyway, I think 1984 might be the best Van Halen album, and I think Sammy is so cheesy.
Oh, come on. It's all synthy. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
It's not all synthy. It's got one synth in one song.
Not my point, John. My point was, so I was at this record show, right, and I bought the freaking Exploited double album version of Punk's Not Dead. So with a bunch of live extra tracks. Anyway, it doesn't matter. My point being, I've been looking for a while now for the first single I ever bought, and I'm not a 7-inch officially, but you know, when I was a kid, you singles still came as, you know, 7-inch singles, like pop songs. And the first 7-inch single I ever bought was Duran Duran. So I've been kind of half-assed looking for it. Like if I ever find my first single, my first Duran Duran single that I bought when I was like 13 or whatever, I'm going to rebuy it. And I found it and I just couldn't pull the trigger. And it was only like $3. I'm like, you know what? I'm never going to listen to this shit. And I didn't buy it. Should I have bought it? If I go back in 3 months, should I buy the $3 Duran Duran?
I'm pretty sure you get that for like $1, Tom. Duran Duran singles? Like, no one wants that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you can't get it for $1 because you got to ship it. I mean, you have to run across. I've been casually looking. Most of the record stores around here don't have huge selection of that. There's one that has tons of
You mean record stores maybe aren't jam-packed with Duran Duran singles from 1981?
Can you believe it? What a scam, huh?
I would get it. For $3, I would get it.
They're not all reissuing right, Duran Duran anytime soon, so, you know.
I mean, I have all the songs. It's just a question of, like, nostalgia. Like, I don't even know what happened to that my first.
Listen, Tom, if I could spend $25 on David Lee Roth singing in Spanish, you could spend $3 on Duran Duran.
You might get more enjoyment out of that stupid David Lee Roth album than I would out of the Duran Duran.
I do enjoy it.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
So I'm so glad I'm here to witness the John and Tom discussion of records, because I really think this should be another podcast.
Like, it probably should be. And John and I should just do a podcast where we argue about one band a week.
Exactly.
Like, we'll argue about Van Halen 1 week, and then we'll do the Misfits 1 week, and then we can do Danzig 1 week.
And then Van Halen the next like week that. Again.
Yeah, exactly. AC/DC, you know, stuff like that.
Sam,
John could claim. John could claim that all the best AC/DC songs were like the guy before Bon Scott.
You mean the two songs recorded by Dave Evans?
Yeah, exactly.
Sam, clearly play a song, Sam, and let's bring some normality to this podcast, and we'll come back and talk about news.
Okay. Well, So I've been jamming out to this for a little bit now, and so a band from New Jersey, recently got back together, Static Radio, and they released an album on Black Numbers recently, like last year. So I'm going to play you Love to Death from their album Resentment.
I've been waiting to be loved. laughed again. My body and me are not dead. The world won't shut you up. Don't need to find me, just give it to skeptics. Oh, there you go. Oh, there you go again. Oh, there you go.
Sam bringing us the tunes. So we had some fun. We got to bring it.
Love it to death, John. I can't believe you can let that go.
What's that?
The name of that song go. The name of the song was Love It to Death, Sam. Is that right?
It's Love to Death.
Oh, Love to Death. I was going to say, I can't believe John let that Alice Cooper reference go, but it was slightly off. So forget it. I rescind that.
So we got to bring it down a little bit because this really is kind of a bummer of a story. As we know, it's been a hot topic in the news lately is Emma Gonzalez and all the other survivors of what was the name of the school where the shooting was at? I forgot the name of the school.
Parkland.
Yeah.
So Emma Gonzalez has been basically the leading, or if not leading, then acting as the focal point of student protesters protesting current gun laws because they don't want to get shot at school, which I think is a pretty reasonable request, not wanting to get shot at public school. I think that's fair to ask for.
I think just expecting not to get shot anywhere is reasonable.
Fair enough. So anyways, you know, it's a real hot topic. And I was about to say we don't get political on the podcast, but we do get political on the podcast, you know. I don't know why. I mean, I actually think we should be more political on the podcast. But right now, a lot of Republican people are like attacking this girl, Emma Gonzalez. And you got honestly, when you're a grown man, like making fun of a 15-year-old girl that survived a shooting, you got to step back and take stock of who you are and what you know what I mean? That's like so messed up. So anyway, a real class act came along and added onto the pile. I wanted to do an article about this at Punk News, and we still might, although I guess the deadline, but the
opportunity,
but maybe we'll do an editorial.
You didn't strike while the iron was hot,
because
so to speak.
Generally at Punk News is we don't do gossip and we don't do other interviews. Like, you know, like let's say Beyonce says Green Day is awesome, or Beyonce says Green Day is terrible. Other publications would pick that up, but we wouldn't pick that up because it's too gossipy for us. It's not news. You know, Beyonce's opinion of Green Day is not news. However, we do make exceptions, and this might be an exception. Jesse Hughes, who's a real class act, he's the singer of Eagles of Death Metal. And some perspective on this, he was performing during the attack at the Bataclan in Paris in 2015, when a whole bunch of people got shot and killed, like 30 people got killed or something like that, like some insane number of people got killed. So you would think the shooting would be very personal to Jesse, who was at a performance where people were killed. So here's what this class act did. He did four Twitter posts, and basically he did four posts attacking Emma Gonzalez and the student protesters. He said that the student protesters are pathetic and disgusting. He posted some memes, which is always a sign of intelligence. And let's see, what else did he do? He did another post saying our guns aren't going anywhere. He also did a post saying there are only two genders. And he also said Donald Trump will be your president for 7 more years. Now, I'm not criticizing the guy because maybe he's pro-gun or maybe because he's, you know, pro-Donald Trump. I think everybody should be entitled to their opinion. I don't think people should be destroyed for their opinions, so long as their opinions are generally reasonable, you know. But I do think it's incredibly poor form of him. Like, is now the time for him to be attacking Emma Gonzalez? Is now the time for him to be insulting 15-year-old children who were shot at? Like he deleted 3 of the 4 posts, but one is still there. And the point is, what do we make of this guy that is literally insulting 15-year-old children that were shot at, like at school? What do you do with that?
I work in the education system as like my real job. So, you know, I don't believe that anyone should be criticizing or saying anything negative to these kids, you know, these teenagers that are trying to change the world, you know. I commend them for doing something like, you know, making a march happen across the world. Me and my husband, we went and marched, you know, for the kids that we serve and for all of the kids, actually. And just, you know, in general, gun violence is not cool. But yeah, no, I don't think after going through such a horrific event that attacking kids that wants to make change for gun violence is what that should not happen. It just should not. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Wait, what's going through this dude's brain? Is he just whacked out on drugs? Is he just an asshole, or like, what's the deal? You know, like why
is he a provocateur? He might just be a provocateur.
He might be a provocateur, but I mean, would Gigi Allen do that? You know,
would Gigi do it? No, yes, he would do that, and then he'd throw poop at you.
Well, fair enough then. But does that mean Jesse Hughes is on the same level of Gigi Allen? Because I
don't know. I don't know anything. I don't really know anything about this guy. I don't know the Eagles of Death Metal.
They suck.
I know that he. I think it was unwise and in poor form. I think you can debate the issue, and you could say something like, I feel bad for these kids, but emotion can't dictate policy or something like that. You know what I mean? You could make a more legitimate argument. He could say more people than that got killed at a concert we went to in France, and that country has almost zero private gun ownership. You know what I mean? He could make a better argument than it's stupid. I don't know what he's doing, John. I just don't know.
Go ahead, Sam.
Well, the other thing is, like, you know, one of the posts that he did post was kind of like fake news. It was a picture of
Emma Gonzalez.
With the Constitution, which is not even the original photo. It was a doctored photo. Like, it's fake news. And he posted it onto, like, you know, his Twittery or whatever for a lot of people to see. And made a statement with that. And, you know, that is also an issue that we have in our government right now anyways. But, like, you know, using real facts and truths to make a point is one thing, but using, like, fake news and, like, appropriating fake news to be, like, your truth is a problem.
Honestly, this guy's a scumbag. Where I come from,
I don't understand why a guy who makes his living on public goodwill would jump into the fray at all.
You just said he's a provocateur. Yeah. But
maybe I don't know. But I mean, are Eagles of Death Metal fans? I don't know anything about Eagles of Death Metal fans. I don't know anything about this band. I mean, are they drawn towards that aspect? I don't know. Lost fans over it, right?
It's a Queen of the Stone Age spinoff band. But what I'm saying, okay, this guy's a scumbag. I mean, where I come from, you don't ever talk bad about children, anybody's children. You know what I mean? That's my culture. So this guy's low class, just stupid, not intelligent, and just a meathead. And maybe he's being a provocateur, but that doesn't mean you can be a provocateur and be a total shithead and scumbag at the same time. You know, they usually go hand in hand, honestly.
Yeah, I'd say most of the greatest provocateurs would probably fall into that category. Yeah,
so listen, don't give this guy press. Don't buy the records. I mean, this band's shitty anyways, but don't go see them. I don't know if it'll negatively affect them at all, because when you get to a certain level of fame.
I should listen to a song just so I know what they sound like.
They're boring rock. They suck. So I would say.
Most of the punk bands we're covering this week.
I would say that a lot of people right now. The question of morale, like the battle between the Republicans and the Democrats, the left and right, used to be morality. But certain factions have now they've completely said, well, we don't even care about morality anymore. We just want to win. And the country is more divided now than ever. And certain factions say it's not about doing what's right. It's about doing what's right for us because we want to win. And that's all we care about. And that's directly propelled by the current president's attitude. And people are here's a great example. Listen to this. You guys want to hear me complain about the state of society in general or not? I mean, basically, people are getting ruder and nastier.
Only if you allow me to provide a voice of reason when you're done.
Well, you disagree with my stance?
No, not necessarily. Well, I kind of do, because I think this idea that we're more divided than ever, I think it's largely a media creation, because I think my neighbors are the same now as they were before. And I think as a country, we're there are a lot of polarizing elements, but the fact of the matter is people are still people and nobody's different than they were before.
I think people are different than they were before.
Our differences are accentuated in the 24-hour news cycle because that's what's...
Well, that's what I'm saying is I think people are more aggressive towards each other now and have more hatred for each other because they say, oh, I'm a Republican, so I hate all Democrats, or I'm a Democrat, so I don't like all Republicans, that kind of a thing. I think that is true, and I think people are nastier to each other, and I think it is much harder to engage in actual discourse than it was, say, 10, 15 years ago. I think it's terrible out there.
That's an online thing, too, because...
Well, I think it's an in-person thing, too.
Everybody's tough when they're... sort of anonymous, well, but
I hear that.
The fact of the matter is most of us are still relatively civil when we have face-to-face discourse.
I don't know if I can agree with that anymore, because here's my example. So I was at Subway today, Subway the sandwich shop, and there was an old lady in there, this podcast is running long, but what can you do about it? So she's kind of like standing around outside. I'm like, is this old lady just like waiting for somebody, or is she like kind of like senile and doesn't know what to do? So I go up to her. I'm like, oh, are you waiting for someone? And she was like, yes, I'm waiting for someone. Like, I think she was mad that she knew I was testing her to see if she was senile or not, you know? But I didn't want to like leave an old lady out in the rain, you know what I mean? So I'm like, okay. So I go into the Subway, and then she comes into the Subway with who I assume was her grandson. And so she's got a cane, and you can see she can't walk too well, and so I didn't want to be like, oh, you can go in front of me, man, because I think she's already mad at me for seeing if she was senile. So I went to the bathroom to like let her move ahead of me in line, you know what I mean? And then when I come back, she's like, you can get in front of me. I'm like, no, I'm still thinking. So she's in front of me. Meanwhile, not one of the people in front of her offered to let her go ahead, right? But that, you know, whatever. At Subway, they don't get the premium help at Subway. Even though people have been at Subway a long time, they still don't understand how Subway works, even though they've worked there for years, you know. So there's this guy in front of the old lady ordering something, and the guy behind the counter is taking a long time. So you know, you guys know at Subway, they have like the sandwich section and then the topping section. It's got like two sections at Subway.
Yeah,
John. We know what Subway is.
It's like a conveyor belt of subs.
Yeah, so they push them along.
The old lady doesn't know this, right? The guy in front of the old lady, he's like standing in front of the sandwich section. So the old lady I think she kind of just thinks it's kind of like a deli. So she goes to the vegetable section, another person working behind the counter said, ma'am, you have to go over there to order, not here. And I'm thinking, this lady's 90 friggin' years old. Just let her order wherever the hell she wants. You know what I mean? Like, who gives a shit? It's Subway, you know? And then the old lady's standing there. Then the guy,
boy, there goes all our Subway ad revenue, John.
So then the guy that was in front of her, like, instead of kind of like... Like, there's an old lady near him, and she's feeble on her feet. Instead of, like, kind of, like, fading back and then moving around her, he kind of does, like, the dart, where you take, like, one step around a person and another, like a triangle. And I'm like, dude, give this old lady some space. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, but I'm thinking it. And it's like people – I do think people are more – and then check this out. So that guy was kind of a dick. Like, he didn't let her go in front of him, and he kind of like stepped around her instead of kind of like did the fade back and move around. So the old lady's paying for her Subway, and it's taking her a long time. So I'm just kind of waiting there hanging out. And people to like my right are kind of getting like impatient. And I'm like, yo, just chill out, people. Like, it's an old lady, you know. So I said to the girl standing next to me, oh, is that a BLT? I know you can get BLTs at Subway. I'm just trying to like make conversation to get people distracted. And she's like surprised that I'm talking to her, like because everyone's on the cell phone these days. Like now when you talk to someone in person, they're like scared and shocked. You know what I mean? Because it's like, why are you talking to me? You know, the point being is I think people are rude and more disconnected and more polarized than ever. And I think people lack manners. And I see that in emails to me, you know, this is disappointing to me.
I mean, I can't disagree with you. I think in a lot of ways we have gotten less civilized, but I don't think that's something that started a year and a half ago or whenever Dumbass got.
No, but I
think that's been a long time.
But I think Dumbass has accentuated it.
Well, I think that's a perception. I think that's a perception, John. I've come to that conclusion.
Well, we are getting our information through tweets. You do know that, right?
Well, worse than that, we're getting our information through logarithms, which have determined what kind of information we want, and then we only get information that supports the viewpoint that we already have.
Truth.
It's a strange world we live in. It's not good.
That's why the only publication I read is Discogs. So listen, speaking of famous people running for
you and me both, and you get 15 emails a day about different variations of releases that you've entered in.
John, do you want the 17th pressing of London Calling? You can get it now. You
know? What's your runoff number? I don't know what that is. I'm not sure.
So speaking of famous people running for office, Joey Keithley's back at it again.
This is how we get behind.
He's running for mayor of Burnaby, British Columbia. And as people remember, he's run a couple of times for political office. And honestly, he's lost every time. And he usually loses by a kind of...
I think badly.
He usually loses by a pretty wide margin. I think mayor is probably the highest position he's run for so far.
No. The lowest, I bet. It's of his small little hometown.
Burnaby? I think Burnaby's pretty big, Tom.
Well, maybe. But I know he ran for what was essentially the same as Congress before. I think this is a much smaller... I think he's more... This is a more realistic... office for him, because that's the way I interpreted it, at least what I read about it, but I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
I wish somebody was on the podcast today and he could explain it to us.
Wish some freaking Canadian was here, right?
So anyways, here's the question.
Explain their backwards political system to us.
Joey's big thing is talk minus action equals zero, and so his point is I'm out there trying to make a difference. But here's the other question. He always loses. You know, I don't know if he's going to lose this time. So is he making a difference? Is he using people's funds to good use? Or could he be using this energy and this money to a better end?
Hey.
Well, maybe he's at least drawing attention to the things he wants, even if he doesn't win. That's the way politics works sometimes.
Yeah. And like, maybe like this time it might go better. Who knows? I don't know. Like, people change. Areas change. I'm not sure about Canada, but you know, punk people do get elected to things. My councilman here in Brooklyn is Justin Brennan from Indecision, so he's representing me.
Sam, if I may counter, Joey Keithley is much more famous punk rock wise than Justin Brennan is. True, yeah. Or not true?
Yeah. Yeah, I would have to say that, yes, but, you know, he might be well-known in the punk community, but may not be, you know, super well-known in his community. Who knows? I don't know.
Well, I think he always associates himself with, like, one of these really fringe small parties.
Yeah.
Like, if he could actually get a nomination for, like, the Labour Party or one of the I don't know what the Canadian parties are. I know it's an English party. But if he could get a nomination
for one of the Bull Moose.
So it is salmon and polar bear are the two big parties.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, it looks like he's running for like some civic green party or something.
Yeah, I think he's running for the green, like the Canadian version of the Green Party, same as Bernie Sanders.
It's probably like the town I live in. It pays like $2,500 a year, and you get to cut a couple of ribbons, and like they have a city manager that actually takes care of things.
Speaking of the snowy white north, the Lawrence Arms have released a new track. The track is called Black Snow, and that's off their upcoming compilation album called We Are the Champions of the World. It's basically a greatest hits album. It's out via Fat Records, and it's got about five songs or so that have never been released before. Two things. I realize the title is a Queen reference, but is it a Lawrence Arms referencing Queen, or are they just jacking the Queen title? And also, what do you guys think of this song?
It could be any number of reasons why this is called Black Snow. You know, it's Brendan Kelly and, you know, in co. So, Who knows? I think this is one of Chris's songs, and I think this song is off of like the recording sessions from like Old Calcutta or something. I listened to it today, and I really, really like enjoyed it. I'm kind of really stoked for this compilation album. I'm not usually stoked about things like that, but I'm happy. So I don't know. We'll see.
That's cool that it's got like extra songs on it. I hate it when a band does a compilation album and they don't put anything extra, anything unreleased on it. I thought the song was just okay. I'm not a huge fan. I don't dislike them, but it was just okay to me. And I have no idea enough. I don't know anything enough about them to know if that's a Queen reference or a self reference or a reference to themselves referencing Queen.
Well, speaking of Q-U-E-E's, the Queers are re-releasing their album Punk Rock Confidential. And here's the question is, man, like Queers used to be held in a certain regard until about 5 years ago. But then
I'd say it was a little longer ago than
you think
that.
So? Yeah. Fair enough. But, yes. But then Joe King has kind of really undone himself on Facebook. So here's the thing is, like, can the Queers ever come back to what they were? Or were the Queers always kind of like just barely famous enough to get by? You know what? Like Screeching Weasel is not that famous anymore. But for a while, Screeching Weasel was pretty famous. Were Queers ever that famous? And has Joe King undone himself through, you know, some Facebook posts that pissed some people off? And another thing is he being?
He always asks too many questions in one chunk.
Is he being punk rock by saying what he truly thinks, or is what he says beyond the pale of punk rock? And even though he's saying what he truly thinks, the things that he's saying can never be punk rock because of what he's saying. Basically, one of the things is when who was the young gentleman that was 14 that got shot in his community? I can't believe I forgot his name. Trayvon Martin. Like Joe Queer.
See, it wasn't Trayvon Martin. It was later than that. It was the guy. I want to say the guy in by St. Louis.
Oh, maybe it was. Anyways.
Darren Wilson was the cop.
Joe Queer publicly supported Darren Wilson. And it even said some things that some people thought were racist towards black people. I can't remember what the phrase was. But he basically said something like those people or something like that, you know, which is iffy. Oh, and he also posted a picture of a long lawn jockey, which is like really offensive, like really offensive. So is that punk rock or is that just a scumbag maneuver? And is Joe Queer like just thrashing around with nowhere else to go? That was like 14 questions.
Some of these bands have had to just embrace the political incorrectness, and one of them is one of your favorites, the Dwarves.
Oh, I disagree 100%.
They're never going to be, but the Dwarves, no matter what you say about them, they're never going to be with the in crowd again. They're never, so they've just embraced their role on the other side of the fence, and I think Joe has done the same thing. Joe is hardly a firebrand conservative. I think, once again, I think more of a provocateur. The real problem is that he doesn't have a real band anymore. I'm a big Queers fan, right? I still think Love Songs for the Retarded is probably top.
I hate that title.
If not 20 for me, probably 50. But anyway, it's a great, great album, though. And they had a really good run there for a while. But he hasn't put anything new out since 2010. And that was a pretty solid little record, but it's been 8 years. And he keeps re-recording his classic material. Nobody is interested in the re-recording the classic material. I usually have the Queers back, but I got to tell you, it's just not very good.
Tom,
and their live show, not having a standard band. What happens is his live show now, he picks up whoever can tour with him, which once again, Dwarves kind of do the same thing.
That's not accurate, Tom. That's just not accurate.
Oh, when the Dwarves come to the Midwest, you get Blag. That's it.
That's Tom, you're wrong.
But anyway.
Tom, you're totally wrong.
Anyway.
You get Blag.
Well, I'm telling you.
You get Mark Diamond.
He who doesn't tour with him.
Sometimes he does, but sometimes he doesn't. But they don't replace him.
He does not come to the Midwest with him. And who's the famous bass player? Nick Oliveri does not come to the Midwest with
him. Sometimes he does.
I'm telling you. I'm telling you. I've seen him a couple times in the Midwest, and it was the Blag show. But anyway.
Tom, you're wrong. You've got Mark Diamond. Mark Diamond's been in the band 25 years.
I don't know who Mark Diamond is.
Well, that's your problem.
He's not as famous as the other guys.
You can't just say, I don't know who the person is, so he's a pickup player. He's not.
All right. Is it the Fresh Prince of Darkness? Is that who it is?
No, it's Mark Diamond. Oh, is Mark Diamond the Fresh Prince of Darkness?
Let me tell you something, John. Last time I saw the Queers and the Dwarves together, they shared two of the guys in the band. The same rhythm section played for both bands. So
the rhythm section, the Dwarves rhythm section, Tom. The Queers were using Dwarves members.
The Dwarf Fruit Session was just different than the time I'd seen them before that. Anyway, oh, we found an add this to the list of bands to argue about.
You simply wrong.
Hey, John, add this to the list of
our podcast. The drummer at the time was Chip Fracture, who was in the band. The guitar player is Mark Diamond.
This would have been about 2013 or so. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
You're wrong, Tom.
I was talking about the queers, John.
Well, you start throwing out fake news. This is how Donald Trump gets elected. People like Tom Trauma say bullshit.
You think the dwarves are ever going to find favor with the in crowd again? It's just never going to happen.
No, I don't think they're going to. No, I don't think they're going to find favor with the in crowd. But I don't think they're the same type of band as the Queers and Screeching Weasel. I think you're entirely wrong about
them.
Where I think you're wrong about that is Screeching Weasel and Queers say things just to offend people at this point, just to be provocateurs. You don't see that with the dwarves. Rather, with the dwarves, you see a more targeted contemplation. The dwarves don't say things just to be shocking. They say things to, I guess, illustrate certain points, if you will.
I don't know.
I think
that's
never been more clear than on the most recent album. So I think
I don't know that I agree level, with that, but it doesn't matter. My point about the Queers being
by the dwarves that you don't hear the Screeching Weasel and the Queers. The Queers are just knee jerks, and the Screeching Weasel just knee jerk. Where the dwarves, I think, have a greater level of intelligence.
You don't know that, but you don't know that. That's
I certainly do know that. I've listened to all those albums. I certainly do know that.
But you know that Ben says things to be knee jerk, and he doesn't. Ben's persona is as well thought out as Blag's. I'm sorry, Ben Weasel knows everything he does and contemplates everything he does. You may not agree with the reason why he does it or like why he does it, but Ben Weasel knows what he's doing. He's not just reacting.
He might know what he's doing, but the result is poor and crappy.
But the result,
and stupid.
But it's a matter of personal preference.
Not really.
John. You're letting your personal preference blind you.
No, not really.
To what's
Tom,
going on. But anyway,
you're misdirecting the conversation.
We're talking about the.
You said that the dwarves are the same as the Queers and the Screeching Weasel, which is not accurate.
They are they are never going to be with the in crowd. So they've just
they weren't the same wasn't because they were never going to be with the in crowd. The reason you said that.
No, that is why I said they were the same.
No, it's not.
I can listen to it, John. I want to hear the tape.
You said,
guys, I love you guys. This is great.
You said that they were the same because they've embraced being the villain or whatever. Or dwarves have not done that.
Bull.
Anyway, have you heard the new record?
I've listened to the new record many times.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm positive, dude.
Well, Tom.
You're telling me the song about being a peeper, a pedophile peeper, is going to get them back in with the good crowd?
Tom, you keep conflating two issues. The issue is not, are they going to be popular with the in crowd again? The question is, are they doing things just to annoy people and just to be the bad guy?
I believe that song is solely to provoke. There is nothing intellectually stimulating about it.
Then neither is Lolita by Nabokov. It's the same thing.
That's easy for you to say.
I know. I think you're unfairly discounting the dwarves and aligning them.
John, you have a personal bias.
Well, so do you. You're trying to defend the Queers, which is a band you like.
I love them all. I love all three of those bands.
There's your bias. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay, but I guess the bias is equal, at least. But anyway, it doesn't matter. My point being, the problem with the Queers, he keeps re-recording his old material, which is never works out. When's the last time you heard, oh man, I like the original, but the re-recorded version kills? It's never been said, ever. But also, he just tours with pickup bands. So basically, all he does is play the Love Songs for the Retarded album, 90% of it. And their shows have no depth to them anymore. Anyway, I love you, Joe, but you got to do better, dude. You got to do better.
Sam.
Is there any stone we left unturned, Sam?
You guys have turned over every stone in a damn lake, man. Sam has no real opinions about the Queers. She doesn't really follow. It's bad when I'm like talking about myself in third person because I'm insane. But I don't follow the Queers. I do find it weird that they are re-recording everything with the new lineup.
Well,
like, why?
It's not even a new lineup. It's like a celebrity lineup, like all different people, whoever they can get. I know they have people from like the Riptides, Parasite, stuff like that. But here's what it is they have a very, very bad relationship with Hopeless Records, who put out those two records that they've re-recorded, Beyond the Valley and Punk Rock Confidential. That's why they're doing it. They're doing it as a screw you to Hopeless so that they own the rights to those albums again instead of Hopeless. That's why they're doing it. It's just not good.
But nonetheless, I was like, it still doesn't make any damn sense unless you're like looking for money, you know?
Well, like I said, I think it's a rights thing. They want those, you know, they want to own those albums again. So now they will own those sound recordings.
But
so if they want to sell those songs or whatever, it could be a money thing. But yeah, I don't think they're selling a lot of these. I think they're very limited vinyl. I know they're doing CD and they're doing very limited vinyl.
Yeah.
I will probably pick them up at some point, begrudgingly, but I haven't yet.
Yeah. Sam's not about
John's
it.
John's being very quiet. He must be researching something so he can refute some of my points or something.
No, I'm just letting you talk. Tom, I know you and I spar a lot, but I didn't want to devolve into bad blood, though I do profoundly disagree.
No, it's not at all, John.
Yeah, I do profoundly disagree with your
I'm more angry about your Van Halen opinion.
I'm amazed.
I'm just kidding. When we argue about bands, it's a matter, a lot of it's mostly a matter of opinion. It's fine. I don't care, dude. Listen to whatever you
I often think
Tom, I don't come to your house and put records on. You don't come to my house and put records
I
on.
I often think that Tom and I are like on the same side of the fence on most things, but I think it's just not true. I think Tom and I might disagree on like everything.
Well, we disagree on a lot of big bands. Mm. I think the small bands, we kind of brush the same ones aside and say this is crap, but I think on the big bands we do not necessarily share opinions. Mm. That's all right.
But isn't that like what makes this entire thing like interesting? Like every single one of us that goes on this podcast, right, has our own opinion. We all listen to quote unquote punk, right? But we all
I'll tell you whether or not it's punk, Sam. No, I'm just kidding.
Fine, whatever.
I'm just being a jerk. No, I'm just being a jerk.
But like, you know, like
I don't want a bunch of people sending in bands again, so I have to tell you whether or not they're hardcore. Remember we went through that stage, John?
Well, I think there's a actual like online like generator thing. Like, oh, is this band emo? Is this hardcore?
Well, Sam the Peacemaker strikes again. So listen, let's break some bread and share some wine. This is a new track by The Garden. The Garden is one of my all-time favorite newer bands. This is off their fifth album. It's called Mirror Might Steal Your Charm. The Garden is super unique, and this track basically is kind of an overview of what the newest album sounds like. This track is called Who Am I Going to Share All of This Wine With? And it's out now. And that was The Garden doing Who Am I Going to Share All of This Wine With off their new album Mirror Might Steal Your Charm, out on Epitaph now. It's a great, great record. You should go check it out. We got a couple of things we're going to blast through. Punk and Drublick Fest has announced a two-day camping festival right in line with a Juggalo Fest. And I will say that Juggalo – what's Juggalo Fest called? Is it called Juggalo Fest? Juggo Fest?
Gathering of the Juggalos.
Gathering of the Juggalos. Like, that really has spawned, like, an entire, like, subgenre of festivals. Fat Records is getting involved in it. It's called Fat Mike Presents Punk and Drublick. And honestly, it's June 1 to 3 in Ohio, of all places. You got a camp there that got craft beer. But like I said, the lineup is pretty banging. First of all, Jello Biafra is playing, which is super awesome. But also playing is Rancid, which is cool. NoFX. Gimme's. Lagwagon. Bad Cop, Bad Cop, Interrupters, Street Dogs,
Face to Face, Bouncing Souls.
It's basically Fat Records Fest and Rancid. It is. And
I
was Jello. Saying,
Jello's. I think Jello's the only one on there who doesn't have some connection to the label at some point.
Jello was kind of friends with Fat Mike. Jello was involved sure. in the.
Well, they're both San Francisco.
Yeah,
guys.
Yeah. So, anyways, I mean, I gotta say, like, I'm not a huge fan of most of these bands, but I'm a huge Jello fan. Honestly, this would be a pretty cool, and I do want to see the Interrupters now. This would be a pretty cool festival. What's your guys' opinion of the 3-day camping craft beer punk music festival? Only 50 bucks. That's pretty cheap, honestly. 50 bucks.
That doesn't include camping, though. No. I was looking at the fine print.
No, the $50 is just for the weekend pass, and it's like $100 for camping or something.
It's like $100 a camp, but that's for up to 4 people.
Yeah.
So I'm actually seriously considering this. There's two kinds of shows that I haven't got into yet. Like, I've been to Rye Fest, you know, a few times, which is 3 days, but it's in Chicago, so we stayed at a hotel, obviously. But I've been looking to do one of these festivals before I get too old and can't stand it anymore, and this might be the one. I haven't done one of these, and I haven't done a cruise yet.
Yeah.
They do, like...
I would never want to do that.
Yeah, but see, like, my wife would be down with that. I'd go, you know, like, on the Flogging Molly cruise and just drink a shitload of beer and... I don't know. I don't think it would be that bad. But anyway, I turn around. My daughter's sitting behind me. I didn't notice. But anyway, I'm about 50-50 on this, John. So if you want to drive out, man, we'll get camping for 4. So
I am not a camper. I am not, John.
I am not a camper either.
I'm not a happy camper.
But you get a lot of bang for your buck when you camp. So you know what I mean? Like, if
no, I don't know what you mean.
If this were in Chicago, you'd be spending $1.50 a night for rooms.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, you know what I'm saying? So for $50, $100 a camp, you know, for less than $500, including driving, food, everything else, you're going to have a heck of a good week.
You know, Jell-O,
you're not much of a drinker. So if you go, I'll take your beer tickets.
You know, Jell-O is going to be in Ohio in June. Maybe we can convince him and the crew to come just a little further east and do a show in Philadelphia.
It's like a 5-hour drive for me, I think. So anyway, yeah, I'm thinking about going, dude. I might be your man in the field out for this one.
Well Tom, we
literally in the field, like passed out.
Let me know, Tom. We might have a you know what I'm saying. Sam,
yes.
Would you go to this, Sam, or what's your opinion of the 3-day craft beer punk festival? Blasphemous or cool?
Okay, so I love camping. Because I love staring into the woods and staring at fire. And I like petting my dog, like, in front of the fire. I love punk festivals, but mixing the two? Not for Sam. This is just something about camping, possibly not showering, drunk people, and... like, you know, a 3-day music festival that is not jiving with me. Although I would love to see all of these bands. I'm actually going to the Philadelphia Punklin Droblick thing.
Oh, you are? I'll go, Sam. I'll see you guys there. I'll go.
Which is just like a 1-day thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yes, it's a 1-day thing, and NoFax and Bad Religion is headlining that. So yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, so I was like, oh.
That's kind of what I've been doing lately. I mean, I haven't done like a full immersion weekend for quite a while. And once I quit going to Riot Fest, I was kind of like, I'm probably not going to do that anymore. But it's been a few years now. I think it's like childbirth. Like when you have a child, the woman's just like, oh, this sucks so bad, I'm never going to do it again. But then after a couple of years, it's like, oh, we should have another one. I think that's me for me, my birthing process is going to punk festivals.
Yeah, well. But
I think I'm ready to give birth again.
Well, just make sure you stay hydrated and wear insoles, please.
Sam.
Come on, Sam. I'm a veteran. I know a thing or two about these things. But yeah, I do tend to get dumb when I drink too much beer. But, you know, it can be good.
Sam, a certain festival in Asbury Park, that's rough out there on that concrete. I'll tell you, it's rough out there.
Yeah, but, you know, if it's for the Bouncing Souls, I will pretty much do a lot for the Bouncing Souls. I will be there.
Man, Sam, I'm...
At least it's not in Vegas on the concrete where it's like 120 degrees.
Oh, no.
Sam, I'm going to see you a lot this summer. That'll be cool. We'll hang out. We'll have a good time. And we'll talk about people that we know. Speaking about people that we don't know, Strung Out have just released a new track. It's off their upcoming acoustic album. The track is called Town of Corazon, which means it's heart in Spanish. So Town of Heart. The record's off Black Out the Sky, and it follows the departure of their longtime drummer. Are you guys excited for this record? Did you dig this track? Where did you guys stand?
I like Strung Out a lot, and I'm actually really stoked about this record. I listened to the track today, and it's different. It's different because it's an acoustic album from Strung Out, but I really, really like the difference about it, you know?
I don't have any issues with Strung Out in general. I like some of their key albums, but this did not do anything for me, I gotta say. I am not on the acoustic bandwagon for Strung Out.
Well, speaking of the opposite of the acoustic bandwagon, Tom, I'm interested in your opinion on this. The Stooges.
Are you, John? Are you really?
Well, we'll find out, I guess, in the next 5 minutes. So the Stooges are now long since broken up because both of the I can't believe I forgot their name. Ashton brothers have passed away.
Both the Ashton brothers.
So it kind of cut the reunion short, I guess, if you will. Since then, it seems like James Williamson has been trying a couple of different projects. He recently just started a new band. The band is called James Williamson and the Pink Hearts. And on vocals, you got Frank Meyer of the Streetwalkin' Cheetahs, which I guess leads the Stooges' version of Rhino Bucket. Tom, you know, when I say Rhino Bucket, do you know what I mean?
You know, I know the name, John, and I remember they were like an 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought they were like a hair metal band.
No, they were like the Bon Scott ripoff band was Rhino Bucket.
Okay.
And so this didn't make a huge splash. James Williamson is without question one of the most famous punk rock guitar players. Well, actually, maybe he's not famous anymore, but he's one of the most important punk rock guitar players of all time. Are you excited for this, or is this just kind of like a bitter thing because you want Iggy to be there? I mean, listen, I was listening to this. The music's there. Like, James Williamson is still James Williamson, but you want Iggy to be there, and it's not Iggy. You know what I mean? So if it's not Iggy, you want it to be someone else that really blasts the house down, somebody like Jello or somebody with real dynamic personality. And I don't know if it was quite there, to tell you the truth.
You know, I watched the 1 minute trailer thing. That's all we have at this point, I think.
Right.
And I agree. It was a pretty decent song. I enjoyed 1 minute of it. Now, am I like stoked about it? No. Will I remember it by the time it comes out? I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be on some dinky, rinky dink label and it's going to be a pain in the ass to find. So we'll see.
Sam, you know, you're more into the, I guess, the newer punk rock, the Stooges. Do they stir anything within you, or you just not care about the Stooges at all?
I actually don't know anything about them. I know. You have to teach me stuff, okay? But I did watch this, like, 1 minute clip of a clip, and I didn't hate it. I was like, oh, this is actually nice. So, I don't
You gotta know, like, I Want to Be Your Dog or something, right, Sam? I mean, you gotta know something.
No.
What's a bigger, is that that's their biggest hit, right, John?
Yeah, I Want to Be Your Dog.
Search and Destroy? You know, Search and Destroy?
Yeah, one of those three. Well, Sam, we will get you reacquainted or acquainted with the Stooges. But that's the thing, is everyone's like, oh, I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it, but, you know, I mean, like, how can you replace Iggy? And, like, Iggy might be the most irreplaceable singer ever, you know? So it's tough, man. It's tough. Let's see. Do we want to talk about this last thing, or are we done with this guy?
I can't remember what it is.
What's that, Tom?
I lost my doc. What is it?
Well, let's talk about Martin Shkreli.
This is a you story, John. The rest of us are over it. This is a you story. Go ahead.
The court has ordered him to forfeit his Wu-Tang record, so he is now given up, or will give up, the most valuable record in the world, which is the $2 million Wu-Tang record. What is interesting is it is now owned by the federal government, so Attorney General Jeff Sessions will determine what will become of this record. The answer is he will almost definitely auction it off and collect the proceeds from the auction, unless he decides to, like, keep it in the Oval Office or something. So who knows where this record is going to wind up, but this record has had a fascinating journey from being rumored about to Wu-Tang announcing it to some unknown buyer buying it for $2 million, to that buyer turning out to be Martin Shkreli, to the court prying it out of Martin Shkreli's hands, to Attorney General Jeff Sessions now auctioning it off once again. The journey of this record is insane. And what do you guys think it's going to sell for? I think way below the $1 million mark it previously sold for on eBay. I'm saying,
well, let's say, John, you were going to pay $14. With including shipping, you're going to pay $14 for a VHS cassette, the band VHS. This, at the end of the day, we came to the conclusion that it was a burned CD, right?
No, actually, we did figure it out, but we forgot. I think it's a.
I'm going to say it's a burned CD, and I'm going to say it'll go for $16. I wouldn't pay that, but somebody will.
Sam, what do you think this is going to sell for?
I honestly don't know what human has money to blow on, like, something like this. Like, you know, $2 million is a lot of damn money. And apparently he's paid $2 million for it. I doubt anyone's gonna, like, pay $2 million again for this album, you know? I really do hope that SNL picks up, like, some weird... like, make some weird digital skit about, like, how crazy this Wu-Tang album is. Like, the life of this Wu-Tang album. Because I think that would be damn funny. But, yeah, I don't think it's going to go for a lot.
I think it'll go for about $300,000, I think. But we'll see. Tom?
What's that based on,
John? It's based on, well, it sold for $2 million originally. Shkreli put it up on eBay. It sold for $1 million on eBay, but the transaction didn't take place. And although there certainly are people that can blow $2 million on a Wu-Tang record, I mean, honestly, it's crazy how rich some people are and how money means like nothing to them. Like people spend like $40 million on a Basquiat, and true, it's Basquiat, but on the other hand, it's just a painting of bricks. You know what I mean? It's like, it's that 40
million. But John, it's a Basquiat.
Well, I, you know, this, it's this Wu-Tang album, you know, and I'm sure I'm like a silent minority when I say this, I wouldn't even care. I don't even care about listening to it. I'm not a fan. I really couldn't care less. I mean, it's an interesting story, but as far as the music itself, yeah. Not for me.
Well, there you have it, Tom Trauma.
And like I said, I'm sure I'm not the only person who's going, who gives a shit about this album?
Sam, are you pro Wu or are you anti Wu?
So I'm from Staten Island. I like used to hang out in like Wu-Tang's like hood. So I
should get him to burn you an extra copy of it.
Yeah, like I don't listen to Wu-Tang, but they're like all over. Like my husband used to go to like some place that like Redman gets his hair cut, and Redman lived down the block. Like the Redman MTV Cribs, like his house is literally down the block from my husband's like old house or whatever. Yeah, they're around. I understand what they mean to, you know, Staten Islanders, New Yorkers, or whatever. I personally don't listen to them.
Oh, I've got a perfect song to play. I'm gonna be bold and play second song. Tom, do you mind if I play second song and then we play your song after that?
Oh, you bastard. Yeah, no, it's fine.
I actually meant to play this earlier. So I recently got a Wu-Tang Clan mixtape. As the listeners know, I'm a big fan of hip-hop mixtapes. I think Wu-Tang's mixtapes are generally better than their albums, the exception being ODB's album and Ghostface's Fish Scale album. So anyways, about a year and a half ago, Ghostface and Killer Priest put out something called Wu-Goo, which is what do you call it when you smoke out of the machine? Vaping. It's like some kind of vaping product. I don't know if it's got weed in it or whatnot, but they put out a mixtape. And what I love about mixtapes is that anything goes and there are no rules. So I'm listening to this mixtape, and then all of a sudden I hear this like drum beat. I'm like, I've heard this before. What is this? And then I realize it's Killer Priest rapping over Billy Idol's Eyes Without a Face. And you would think it would not work, but it works. So this is Killer Priest rapping over Billy Idol. Check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Killer Priest. Ghostface Killer. Zodiac on the tracks. Yeah. Fall for the engineering. What you hearing? It's Wulong. Wugu, pure hash or scented, vanilla, mango, incense, coconut, soda cups, tea, oolong minted, strawberry, pineapples, liquid clear capsules, loaded in the sticks, it's explosive when it hits, you'll be two-stepping like I'm opening this bitch, press the pen and take a puff, when you feel you took enough, pass it to the rabbit, say you took too much, no need for rolling up the Dutch, all you need is a touch, Dr. Zodiac, smoking like a maniac, cure depression, only thing that make my brain relax. Take a tote, blow out the key lime smoke. It tastes good, try a weed line soap. Wow. Look, lemon drops, lollipops in the mini shops. Batteries rechargeable. Smoke vanilla at the barbecue. The year of the goo. We have a woo rock garden too, coming soon. Yeah, dynamite sticks, woo woo hash or got a nice kit. Once the batteries click, LED lights lit. You're doing it right, so take a hit like this. WeMagnet.com, WeMagnet.com. Yeah. Dynamite sticks, woo woo hash or got a nice kit. Once the batteries click, LED lights lit. You're doing it right, so take a hit like this.
And we're back. I'm sorry, Tom. I hope you don't mind indulging my whims there. But do you have a tune to play to bring us back to some punk normality?
Yeah, let's take it home with a local Grand Rapids band here who put out an EP earlier this year. And it's really good stuff. It took me a little bit to get into it, but now that I've kind of figured it out, I really like it. And they're called 78 Revolutions Per Minute. I'm not sure if they get their name from the Old Fashioned Records or from the Stiff Little Finger song, or if the Stiff Little Finger song came from the Old Fashioned Records. I don't know. Anyway, they're called 78 Revolutions Per Minute. Their EP is called Here Lies a Mouthy Kid. And I'm going to play the last song from that. It's called Broken Records.
It was all roses and wine, circa 1999. Back when my mentor spoke through headphones, my victories all had soundtracks, and I'm only getting back there just today by the good graces of those to whom I hate to say, thanks for playing the way you play. 'Cause all I stand for are these broken records. Well, all I stand for are these broken records. You know what?
Why?
Screw the kids, screw the battles. I won't win due to the condescending ways by which I try to promote change, because we all listen. My heroes are all dead, save for the precious few who stayed as strong as the backbones of the protest songs. Lend with fine. Get what it means to gamble it all. Flirt with losing all but heart. You gotta dance all push so you know I'm in it.
78 revolutions per minute.
And that was 78 revolutions per minute. I think, Tom, didn't we just recently run a review of that record?
Actually hasn't run yet, John. So if you feel like it.
Maybe we'll run it on Friday then. I thought I ran it already, but maybe not. I ran it today. Anyways, Tom Trauma, thanks for being on the podcast. How did it feel to be here without Adam? Refreshing, scary. What was it like without Adam as a safety net?
You know, without his like gentle Canadian like mediating, you and I got into it pretty good.
We did.
Sam did her best, but we just kind of bowled her over.
I was just laughing the entire time.
I really think you might have something there with the Tom and John argue about bands podcast.
Yeah.
Like, it would just be so like overdriven and just so like overmodulated
and long,
unlistenable.
It'll be so long, but it's so delightful.
Because we both would research and it'd be like, yeah, well, what about blah, blah, yeah.
Well, that's why you would pick one band and argue till death.
or we lost till death, or we lost every single person who was interested in listening.
Exactly.
Sam,
which one would come first?
Sam, it's always a treat to have you on the podcast. I hope you're on more in the future. We love having you on. Sam, any closing words? What should we close out tonight's podcast with?
We miss you, Adam. Please come back. You need to separate these two, and I'm really tired.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.